AP Radio News. I'm Tim McGuire. A truck driver faces charges in the New Jersey Turnpike crash that has left comedian Tracy Morgan and two others in critical condition. Julie Walker has more.
The 30 rock star was airlifted to Robert Wood Johnson Hospital, where he's in intensive care. Three others, including comedian Artie Fuqua Jr., were also taken to the hospital, and one person, James McNair, died. New Jersey State Police spokesman Greg Williams.
The driver of the truck trailer, he failed to observe slow-moving traffic ahead of him.
Williams says the tractor trailer tried to swerve but ended up hitting the Mercedes limo bus carrying Tracy Morgan, which then overturned. Four other vehicles were also hit. I'm Julie Walker.
The scramble is on to improve conditions for hundreds of lone children who are in the country illegally. The Department of Homeland Security has been sending the children, most of them teenagers, to a makeshift holding center in Nogales, Arizona. Some 700 of them so far. Arturo Garino is the mayor of Nogales.
They work very closely with us in the city of Nogales. Now, as a city, we need to help Border Patrol so that they can accomplish their goal and making sure that these children are all taken care of.
Arizona Daily Star reports that the Consul General of Guatemala visited the center and estimated about 250 of the children are from Guatemala, with the rest from El Salvador and Honduras. A senior U.S. official says Sergeant Bo Bergdahl has told those treating him that he was tortured, beaten, and held in a cage by his Taliban captors in Afghanistan after he tried to escape. The official says it's hard to verify what Bergdahl is saying about conditions of his captivity in the hands of the Taliban. He was released a week ago after nearly 5 years in captivity. New York Times reports doctors saying Bergdahl is not yet ready emotionally to see his family. This is AP Radio News. California Chrome falls short in his bid to win the Triple Crown, placing fourth in the Belmont. Warren Levinson with more.
In the end, California Chrome fell victim to the Triple Crown's exhausting schedule. Jockey Victor Espinosa said he wasn't quite the same horse who won the Kentucky Derby in Preakness.
I feel like he was a little bit empty today.
When it was time to make a move for the lead, he didn't have the energy. Tonalist, who missed the first two legs, did.
We came to the Belmont with a fresh horse. We trained at Belmont. We had a race at Belmont. And he trained very well here in the morning.
Christophe Clement is the winner's trainer. Chrome co-owner Steve Coburn was furious, saying not running all three races is the coward's way out. Clement declined comment. Warren Levinson, Elmont, New York.
The L.A. Kings are up 2-0 in the Stanley Cup Finals, beating the New York Rangers 5-4, double overtime. Maria Sharapova takes the women's title in the French Open in three sets over Simona Halep. Rafael Nadal faces Novak Djokovic in today's men's final. I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. The only thing I didn't learn in school today is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Hey, Mom, why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why isn't 11 pronounced 21?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza around?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Colin Callahan, with my co-host, Dana Theos. Dana, could you give us the lineup of guests for today?
We have a great lineup of guests today. We start off with Bill Knight, President and CEO of the Fairfax 2015 World Police and Fire Games. Then we have Karen Schwartz, owner of Springboard LLC. Linda Mathis, CEO, American Red Cross, National Capital Region. And we wrap up with John Marion, President, Logos Technologies.
Great. So it's my pleasure to introduce Bill Knight. Bill, welcome. Bill is the President and CEO of the Fairfax 2015 World Police and Fire Games. What is the Fairfax 2015 World Police and Fire Games?
The World Police and Fire Games are an enormous sporting event. Mm-hmm. It's a competition for public safety officers. So police, fire, and other first responders mm-hmm. compete in Olympic-style competitions, and it includes 60 sports. Wow. We expect 12,000 athletes to give you a little bit of a feel for the magnitude there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a lot.
The Summer Olympic Games in London had 10,700 athletes, so we exceed that number as well as the number of sport competitions.
Mm-hmm. And this year it'll be held in 2015, it'll be held in Fairfax County.
That's right. Uh-huh. June 26th to July 5th of 2015 in Fairfax County and the National Capital Region. It's that big to encompass the region.
Uh-huh. That's a lot of people coming into the area. Great. And how did you get involved with this World Games?
Well, I feel fortunate that I've had the opportunity to be involved in a lot of big events, mm-hmm. From the Atlanta Olympic Games to the World Cup soccer, Super Bowls, major golf tournaments, and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So it's my background in running big events, mm-hmm. and sports and events like this have a lot to do with business, uh-huh. and they're big business. And so I enjoy that.
What's the most exciting part of all that? What do you really get jazzed about?
No, I think it's taking it from start to finish. Mm-hmm. With the World Cup early on, I started with a handful of us, and 3.5 years later, it became just the best World Cup ever. And, seeing that and building the teams as you go along, mm-hmm. and I don't think any two events are the same.
Right.
So it's a dynamic process, and I really enjoy that.
So how young were you the first time that you did something, put something together, got the group together, and watched it go from beginning to end?
It's hard to point to something in my childhood. I was on the playing field so much myself, completed a lot of ball games and things. But, it occurred to me, as my dad has been a big influence in my life.
Yeah.
And he was a sort of a country attorney, uh-huh. And entered politics, had a very successful career. He was in the state house. Mm-hmm. But I think that he had some aspirations that ultimately didn't pan out. And you realize when you didn't quite get where you wanted to be, mm-hmm. there's a void. And so that whole completion of the process and bringing it to fruition was something that I've always strived for.
Right. So as a kid, the events you were working on in a way were your dad's election process.
Absolutely. That was actually a lot of fun, a lot of community-oriented activities, and I think that had an impact on me.
Mm-hmm. And whereabouts did you grow up?
Noonan, Georgia, Georgia. About 30 miles south of the Atlanta airport.
Uh-huh. And did you have brothers and sisters?
Yes, I have an older brother, uh-huh. About 18 months older, so we were very competitive. Mm-hmm. And then I've got a younger sister, about 5 years younger.
So you were the middle child?
That's correct.
What's true about the middle child?
I don't think that's as predictable as people seem to pigeonhole it. Because I think I'm very sort of mild-natured, but I can go from being very laid back to being very intense. Mm-hmm. And so, I think the laid back is part of the generalization. And,
right, the balance.
Yeah. Right.
There's also a pivot there, too. Dana?
So you said you were playing sports a lot as a kid. Did you have time for a job ever?
I did in my high school years. I did. I had a job sort of managing the vault at a bank.
The vault where they keep all the money.
That's right.
And why did they trust you, a high school kid, with the vault?
I don't know. Maybe small town, good relationships. Maybe they trusted me. But that was an interesting job. It may have been one of the first times that I worked with police officers, because I had escorts taking money from one branch to another, mm-hmm. and so forth. And I'm really enjoying working with police and fire today. Mm-hmm. It's a total different event, but it's a ton of fun. And our staff is integrated with public safety. Mm-hmm. So we're really public safety putting on a major event for their own brethren,
right,
and bringing the community together to celebrate it.
Yeah, and a large worldwide event.
Yes.
Go ahead, Dana.
So I'm curious, you've done a lot of big sports events, which are real, glitzy and flashy, and here you are working with public safety officers, and I'm wondering, what is the, what's the characteristics of this event that are similar and different, and what makes you good at leading in both of those environments?
Okay, yeah, I think every event involves public safety to some degree. Mm-hmm. They're usually more specifically on security and things of that nature. With this event, we're bringing them into every element of the operation, and it's really fun to see them work on the planning side, because they're generally emergency response oriented,
right.
But they have some great planning skills too, and we're taking full advantage of that, and we're combining that with people that have event experience, and I think the people skills are very important in working with anybody, and public safety certainly included. It is a tight fraternity. You're probably aware that that group is a tight fraternity, mm-hmm. but once you develop some trust with them, then they become your brothers as well, so and sisters.
Did you have other mentors along the way?
In addition to my dad,
yeah.
My mom gave me a lot as well. Mm-hmm. She had a great business sense and had tremendous compassion for people, and mm-hmm. I think those serve you very well.
How does that show up in your leadership style, what you learned from your mom?
It probably gives me this internal checkpoint, or this, the bird on the shoulder saying, whispering in my ear to redirect or what have you. But she was a school teacher, mm-hmm. and also a antique shop owner, and dealt in a lot of different things, and helped my dad manage some things. But other people that have had an influence on my life are actually people in my business, mm-hmm. Who were part of the leadership of World Cup or the Olympic Games, like the Billy Paynes mm-hmm. of the world, but. Mm-hmm. I'm working today. It's exciting to be working today with the likes of Sharon Bolivar uh-huh. and Governor McAuliffe and Jim Corcoran, whose mm-hmm. office we're in today.
Yeah.
Everybody in this community is pulling together, and that's what I really enjoy in what I do.
You'd mentioned before, and I wrote down this comment in our earlier conversation, galvanize the community. How important is that, and where did you first learn that?
Oh, it's critical for mm-hmm. A big event like this, and at the end of the day, volunteers mm-hmm. are your number one resource, mm-hmm. And we're going to be utilizing 4,000 volunteers. But how did I first learn that? I think it goes back to my dad's politics, mm-hmm. and he was also very very much a volunteer in coaching sports mm-hmm. and things of that nature. But politics demands that you engage in the community and community activities,
especially local politics.
Right,
I get a real sense that as you were working at his side, that what he was doing was galvanizing and pulling the community together.
I agree, absolutely.
And here you are doing it today.
did you think you'd be doing something similar? Did you ever think you'd run for office?
You know, that's funny. I don't know that I would ever do that. I like a challenge, and what I hope, I assume what I'm doing probably demonstrates that. But putting yourself out on the line as a politician is a little bit of a different challenge for me personally. So I don't know that would be my road.
You've seen it up close and personal,
right?
So is your dad aware of your success today?
Unfortunately, my dad passed away in 2002, but he was able to experience the World Cup and the Olympic Games and some other great experiences that I had. Yeah. And so, those were special times.
Yeah. If you were here today, what do you think he'd say about your success?
I think he always knew that I was pretty determined because he saw me compete with my brother.
So he wouldn't be surprised.
No, I don't think so.
Great. And what's the website, Bill?
The website is fairfax2015.com.
Great. Thank you. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight.
And your name is?
Dana Theus.
And the name of the organization?
EmpowerCoaching.com.
And what does Empower Coaching do?
Well, we support mid-level to senior managers and leaders achieve professional success by developing themselves personally.
Why does this turn you on so much?
Well, I have found in my own experience and my own leadership journey that the better I was at being a good human being, the better leader and the better business I ran and the more successful I was. And I want to help other people do that.
So you're able to help the folks in an organization throughout the organization achieve what they're looking for as well as help the organization move forward.
Well, to move an organization forward, you've got to master the soft skills of dealing with people effectively. Mm-hmm. You've got to learn to negotiate every relationship successfully for both parties. Mm-hmm. You have to communicate confidently. Mm-hmm. I support people and help them learn to develop those skills themselves to be strong leaders.
And you have a specialty working with women?
I do work a lot with women. Mm-hmm. They're drawn to this work, but not exclusively.
Mm-hmm. And to learn more about what you're up to, is there a website address?
InPowerCoaching.com. That's InPowerCoaching.com.
Excellent. This has been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theus, with my co-hosts, Les Smolin of Vistage Chair and Luca Salvi, Shepherd Mullen. Next up, we have the lovely Sylvia Lagerquist, President and founder of Haynes & Lagerquist CPA. Sylvia, what is Haynes & Lagerquist CPA?
We are a CPA firm that works with owner-managed professional service firms, and we help our clients analyze their financial information so that hopefully they can make the wisest decisions possible. Our firm is primarily located in Prince George's County. We have 5 employees and about 100 clients in our client base.
So you own the company?
Yes, I do.
And how long have you owned the company?
I started my own firm in 1993, working from my home. And then in 2006, I purchased another accounting firm located in Bowie, and moved into those offices. At what point then I took on, tripled the size of the business and took on about 10 employees.
So I want to come back to that success, but let's start from where did you grow up? Were you Maryland?
No, I'm not a Maryland person. I grew up in the White Mountains of New Hampshire.
How many brothers and sisters?
And I have a sister and 2 brothers, and I'm the oldest.
You're the oldest. And what were Mom and Dad doing when you were growing up?
My mom was mostly a stay-at-home mom until I was about middle school, and then she worked part-time in a department store. So as the oldest, really, she relied on me for a lot of helping her out with the home, cooking, doing laundry, taking care of my siblings. My dad's family has been in the grocery business, and my dad's cousin owned a wholesale distributorship, and my dad worked there as an employee, eventually owner. My brothers worked there as well.
So you were taking care of the family. Were you also working in the family business?
No, it wasn't. No, it was a no girls allowed business.
Talk to us about that. What does it mean, no girls allowed?
Well, it just never came up, really. It just was clear that the girls didn't get to work there. I remember when my dad was still a truck driver in the business, and I wanted to go out on his route with him, which took him out of town through the tourist destinations in the White Mountains of New Hampshire. And it was a big battle, you know, oh, no, girls don't do that kind of thing. Whereas my brother trailed my dad, he was called Shadow, trailed my dad in, you know, in his business as a salesperson, as a truck driver. So you just
said, okay, fine, I don't have to do that sort of thing, and went off and lived in a hole.
I don't know that I would say that I lived in a hole. I maybe just developed my independence in other ways, primarily by leaving. It just grew up and I left and never went back.
So that's interesting. So there wasn't an opportunity for you in the family business, so you left and started your own.
I eventually started my own. Right out of high school, I didn't know what I really wanted to do, and so I decided I really liked music and I wanted to major in music. I had an experience in high school where I had gone to a summer debate camp, and I stuck around with the girl from my school, even though I didn't like her that much because I was too shy to get to know the others. And so when it came time to decide to go to college, I decided I wasn't going to go to the University of New Hampshire where the rest of the class was going. I would go someplace where I would meet people from all over the country.
So how does a shy, musically inclined person end up doing what you do now?
I ended up in accounting quite by accident. I had no idea what accounting was about. I met my husband playing in an orchestra, and when we got married, we decided that we might have an instrument repair shop in a music school, and I knew that if we did that, I'd be the one to be doing the books. And so I took my first accounting class, and I really liked it. I had done well in geometry in high school, these very foundational classes, and with, you know, where you have a foundation, everything is based on that foundation. And I'm a very tactile learner and a problem solver as well, and that's the kind of homework that you get in accounting. And so I went into public accounting saying I wanted to work with small businesses and slowly learned to be unshy. You know, when you go out on your own and you're the only one that can bring in the rain, you kind of learn to be unshy.
I find this to be really an interesting story, Sylvia, but there still, in my mind, seems to be a big jump between doing the books for a business in a music repair shop and then opening up your own CPA firm.
Well,
how did that happen?
Well, clearly I liked accounting, and of course the ultimate is to become a CPA when you're an accountant. It's kind of the thing to strive for. And so I went into public accounting working with small businesses, and I would see the bosses going out to have the meetings with the clients. And that's the role that I wanted. I really didn't like being left back to you know, do the grunt work, so to speak.
You didn't want to live in that hole.
I didn't want to live in that hole. And so I decided, I was in public accounting, for maybe 8 years before I decided to just open my own shop, and I walked away with a few clients, so I had a little bit of a client base when I started.
And so going back a little bit and looking at your first career in music in an orchestra, tell us what qualities or skills from that are you using now today in your CPA firm?
Well, I was a music ed major, so I never did play in an orchestra. I did teach. I was the fine arts teacher at an American prep school outside of Salzburg, Austria for a year. I think the skills that are very important in public accounting and the kind of work that I do is, I think I'm a kind of well-rounded person. I have a number of interests and I like different things. And since I sell a very personal service, it's about the connection that I make with the business owner. And when I have this diverse background, I find that I can make a connection pretty easily with somebody that helps them trust me and develop that relationship where they'll trust that very private information with me.
I'm curious, you know, as a woman, you know, we run into the no girls allowed rules all over the place.
and too many women listen to those rules. As someone who's never listened to those rules, what would you say is the best advice you can give to anyone out there that encounters a no blanks allowed?
Well, I think that's part of the thing when you go out on your own. You just decide that you're not going to follow those rules, and then you just go and do your own thing, and you do your own rules.
Where do you find the confidence to keep going when things get tough?
That's a tough question, because I think that the image that we need to put forward is not necessarily what we're really feeling inside. And I've belonged to I'm a founding member of a small group of women business owners. We're only seven of us. And I have a weekly phone call with two of those women where we try to support one another, because we wear so many different hats, and it's such a tough world. And we're alone at the top. We're the only ones in our firms, you know, doing this. So we need to have the support of one another in order to help us get through all of this. And so we get by giving.
Explain that.
Well, every time that I'm helping one of the other women business owners with a problem that she's struggling with, I feel I'm sort of getting something in return. You know, sometimes you need to take your own advice.
And someone can remind you that you need to take your own advice.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So in that way, I feel like I'm learning. Because in a way, it's kind of like the same consulting I'm doing with them, I can do with my clients.
You were in boarding school.
Mm-hmm.
What did it feel like to be sent away?
I didn't get sent away.
You wanted to go?
I wanted to go. I have an aunt that's only 7 years older than me, and she went for her last year of high school, because she was thinking of becoming a nun, and eventually did that. My first cousin went to the same boarding school. So part of that tradition of where I grew up, my mom thought it would be great discipline. And so it was something that came from me. It wasn't something that I was sent away. It was only 7 miles from home.
Ah, okay. You weren't sent to Austria when you were in high school.
No, the Austria thing was after college, where I went and lived in Salzburg for 2 years.
And so now, looking back at your experience in this boarding school, what was it that you took with you that you use today? Are there things that you learned in boarding school, or a discipline, the way of life there, that helped you in your career?
I'm not sure. Maybe just a little bit of the independence and being away from home, a little self-sufficiency. You have self-reliance when you're in boarding school that maybe you don't have at home, when you're living at home.
I want to piggyback off of that and ask, because this theme seems to be coming out of the conversation, at least for me, and that is, you seem to be breaking barriers all the time. You break the barrier about being shy. You break the barrier about, you go from one, a music background, into an accounting background. What is it that surprised you most about yourself in making all these, kind of breaking down these barriers, if you will?
I'm not sure. It just seems natural. It just seems like what I do. I think there's an independence streak. Somebody else earlier talked about equity and fairness. I certainly have a strong sense of that equity and fairness as well. Sometimes the way you are, you just kind of take for granted. Other people like yourself maybe see something differently than I do.
If your mom were here today, sitting with us in the studio, would she be surprised at your success?
Oh, that's a difficult question, because I was raised with when you grow up and have a family. Well, if you're going to study music, then you should study teaching, because then if something happens, then you have something to fall back on. So it was always a secondary role, and my dad didn't believe in educating women. So with my mom, it's hard for her, and I think it's in some ways to see the success, because that's not the role model that she had for me.
Thank you. What's the website?
www.hainesandlagerquist.com, and the and is spelled out.
This is Dana Theus with my co-hosts, Luca Salvi and Les Smolin. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in just a moment, right after this Business Spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Jody Ruth, founder and president of Acumetrics. Welcome, Jody. Jody, what is Acumetrics?
Acumetrics is a firm that works with CEOs that are interested in growing their revenues and bottom lines in a scalable, sustainable way.
And what's your role within the company?
I'm the founder and president.
And what is it about the job that you bring that's so unique to you, that special gift, as we say?
That special gift? I enjoy working with the CEOs to have them achieve goals that they thought were impossible.
And what is it about the organization that makes it so special?
We work, our clients say that it's the three P's: our people, our platform, and our processes. Our people are highly qualified and they're fun to work with. Mm-hmm. Our processes are enabling of reliable and timely financial information, and our platform is scalable.
And who is, or what is perhaps, the perfect client for you?
Businesses of any size that want reliable, timely financial information.
Mm-hmm. And what do you enjoy most about this work?
I enjoy working with the clients and making a difference. We like to help the CEOs understand their financial information so they can make different choices tomorrow to impact future results of the business.
That's great. What's the website for the company?
www.acumetricsllc.com.
Thank you, Jody.
Thanks, Les.
We've been speaking with Jody Ruth, founder and president of Acumetrics. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theus, with my co-hosts, Les Smolin and Luca Salvi. Next up, we have Buddy Reiser, acting director of the Loudoun County Department of Economic Development. Buddy, what is the Loudoun County Department of Economic Development?
We're the business arm of the local government. Our job is to increase the commercial tax base by attracting and retaining and helping our companies expand.
And how big is the organization?
We have about 24 people in our department. The county government's probably 2,000 plus.
And how did you get involved?
I took this job 7 years ago with the idea that coming from a Fortune 500 background and a small business owner background, that I could add some value and help companies grow, and thought it would be a great experience for the second phase of my professional career.
The second phase. What was the first phase?
I was a radio broadcaster for most of my life. I started when I was 15 years old on the radio and did that for about 25 years, and then bought my own radio station, which I ran for about 5 years.
15 years old, and you started your own radio program?
Yeah, I did, and it's something that I knew very young that that's what I wanted to do when I grew up.
How did you know that?
I'm very stubborn. I decided early on that was me. I was going to be a radio guy, and I put my entire imagination behind the idea of doing it. So by the time it really happened at age 15, I was prepared and ready to go.
Who actually said to you that you've got to be in radio? I mean, was there anybody that influenced that decision, or how did you come up with it?
No, I think for me, I was just looking very hard at what I wanted to do, and I got very focused on that. And the music came first, listening to the music, discovering new music. So that when
this is you as a child,
this is me
to music?
As a child, yeah.
What kind of music were you listening to?
Well, you know, I was started as a pop baby, and then kind of got into the rock music as I grew a little bit older.
And what was the significance for you of music growing up?
I think that it was the creative outlet. It was understanding how the music kind of changed people's lives, and I found it transformative. I never felt better than when I was listening to music.
When did you know that?
I can't remember ever not knowing that.
Really?
Yeah.
So, Buddy, you were a radio guy for 25 years, and then you made your way now to the Department of Economic Development for Loudoun County.
Mm-hmm.
What did you take from your radio days that you use today in your job?
Well, I think it's all of it. It's the ability to relate to people. It's the ability to craft a message and be able to communicate that message. It's the ability to talk to people and understand what they need out of the experience, and then be able to kind of transfer those skills. At the end of the day, sales is always going to be about communication, and really that's what I do.
And then you're also a local guy here in the area, right?
Yeah, grew up in the region, grew up in Hagerstown, went to college in Baltimore, worked most of my life in Washington, D.C., and now very happy to be in Loudoun County, Virginia.
And is that an important part of what you do today, having that local background? Does that benefit you at all?
I think it does. I think that I understand the people here. I think I understand what's important. I understand what their values are. And I can speak their language. We have common backgrounds and common things that we can talk about and understand.
Why is the message so important? Why isn't it about the showmanship?
I think that showmanship without message is just a wasted exercise. I think it's all about being able to communicate a value proposition. In my business now, what I'm selling is confidence, that companies can come to Loudoun County, that they can have the confidence that we'll do everything that we can to help them succeed. And I think that that's what we're trying to leave with people.
So I'm hearing a theme here of confidence, because you described your childhood as stubbornness, but a 10-year-old that decides to go into radio and does it by the age of 15 has got to be pretty confident.
Yeah, I think that I think most people will tell you that I don't lack for confidence on a general basis. But, you know, I think I learned very young how to set goals and how to achieve goals. And, you know, I set out to be an Eagle Scout and did that at the very youngest possible age. And I wanted to graduate college in 3.5 years, and I did that with honors. So I think that when you start to have these successes behind you, it gives you a little bit of confidence and gives you the kind of feeling that you can do things and can accomplish things.
So go back to when you first realized that this game of gaining confidence was an important part of growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Who were the people that were influencing you then? What was Mom or Dad doing?
Well, I think that they were always very supportive. They raised three very different kids in three very different ways. And so I give them a lot of credit for being able to do that. And I think they were always there to try to help us feel good about what we were doing and help us build on our successes.
So tell us a little bit more about the three different ways. How are you different from your other two siblings?
Well, I'm all about books and music and being out there. My brother is all about cars and hunting and is very much more reserved. And my sister is completely different than those two things. She's also very quiet and does more mathematics and those types of things, and has her MBA. And so we all grew up different and doing different things and having different goals, and my parents supported all three of us in whatever we wanted to do.
How did they do that with you specifically?
They never put any limits on me. They, you know, when you're a 10-year-old boy and your dream is to be on the radio, I think that there might be parents who go, you know, why don't, you know, you're a straight A student, why don't you think about being something else, or why don't you think about, you know, try to sway me. They always supported what my goals were.
So they knew back when you were 10 that this is what your dream was.
I think even before then, that was my dream, to be on the radio.
What do you think? Go ahead.
Is your work today helping small businesses in Loudoun County? Is it something about that, helping dreams come true?
I think it is. I think that, and seeing a community grow, the growth that we've seen in Loudoun County over the last 7 years is something that I get excited about. Getting up every day and going to work and helping to build that community and help businesses grow and help entrepreneurs start their business, that's really what gets me up in the morning these days.
And yet, you showed me a picture earlier. Our listeners can't hear. He's in a lovely suit, very, very businesslike. But you showed me a picture of you with Aerosmith, not wearing a suit.
Yeah, I think I was all in leather with my hair halfway down my back. And, you know,
right.
Now I have no hair and $1,000 suits. So, you know, things change. You know, I'm 5 years ago, I was over 310 pounds. Now I'm pretty svelte 180 and work very hard to keep it off. So
where did that desire to change your life so completely come from?
I think I just woke up one day and I said it's time to start again. Time to hit control alt delete and let's try this whole thing again. And I'm very fortunate because I've been able to follow two dreams really to a very high level. And I feel very blessed by that, and I don't take that for granted any days.
Is that confidence? Does it come from confidence? Or, I mean, most people follow one track and that's it. You're saying you followed two dreams.
I didn't want to continue my old dream. I achieved what I was looking to do. So once I achieved that, I knew that I needed to set myself on a different course. I needed to reinvent, and I needed to go for something different. And that's what I did.
And tell us about when you decided to reinvent yourself. Was it something that you had planned and targeted, or was it something that sort of came unexpectedly?
No, I think that for me, it became organic because I became involved with economic development commissions through my radio days, and I started to see what value there could be in having that kind of expertise helping business, and I just kind of said, well, you know what? Maybe that's what I want to do going forward.
So there's a lot of people listening to this right now who may have a dream, and it may be to change careers. And we know there's some challenges there. What advice would you give to people who really want to change their life so completely?
I think that you have to throw yourself into it completely. You have to commit to being a different person, not inside, but you have to reinvent yourself, pick up a new skill set, or at least hone your skill set, and really commit to being different. Take off the leather suit, cut your hair, get a nice suit, and go to work every day. Mm-hmm. You know, I would go entire years in my radio career where I wouldn't even wear long pants. You know, it's a different thing, but you have to commit to that in order to succeed these days.
So your dreams are important, but so is doing it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. What do you think when you look back at the story that you were kind of crafting when you were younger, and how that ties to what you're doing now?
I think it all ties together very nicely. I mean, I think at the end of the day, my goal was to succeed. My goal was to do something that was valuable, and my goal was to do something that I could be proud of, and that my parents could be proud of. So I don't think that there's any one way to do that. I think that life is an evolution, and mm-hmm. when you can kind of find paths that you can follow where you feel comfortable and where you feel like you can be successful, I think that that is one of the biggest recipes for success.
Looking back, or perhaps even now, what would your parents say be most surprised about?
Boy, I don't know. I'd like to think that they are very proud. I like to think that you know, my father likes to tease, and so he says, for the first time in my life, I have a real job. He never thought being on the radio was a real job, though I know he was proud of that. But I think that he understands putting on a suit and going to work every day. So I think that they would be very proud of everything I've done so far.
And how about all those rock stars you used to travel with? If they could all be sitting here with us in this tiny little room and say, what's the one thing they take away from being with Buddy? What would they tell us?
I think that they would probably tell you that there were some wild times back in the day. you know, we did a lot of fun things and, you know, traveled around the world. You know, I used to travel around the world with rock stars. Now I travel around the world with CEOs and the chairman of our board of supervisors. It's a slightly different way of going, but it's... that was a great life, and this is a great life, too.
Great. What's the website?
You can find us at biz.loudon.gov.
This is Dana Theis with my co-hosts, Les Smolin and Luca Salvi. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in just a moment, right after this Business Spotlight.
This is Peter Schwartz with Vistagen International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining me for this segment is Doug Kay, who is a principal with a firm called Offutt Kerman. What is Offutt Kerman, Doug?
Offutt Kerman is a full-service law firm in the Mid-Atlantic region with offices from Philadelphia all the way down to Tysons Corner, Virginia, where I work.
Right. And you're a lawyer with the firm?
I'm a lawyer with the firm.
What practice area do you specialize in?
I mostly do work in commercial litigation, although I also do work with in doing criminal defense and personal injury, anything that gets me to trial.
Anything that gets you to trial. Well, why do your customers appreciate you?
I think they appreciate me because I am a careful and sympathetic listener, and I try to offer concrete solutions to their most vexing legal problems.
Well, give us an example. Do you have, without mentioning specifics, a recent example of where you were really good at this? How about your favorite client up till now, without getting into two particulars there?
Well, I represented a fella who was in a commercial lease, and the landlord was determined to make him pay more than he should have been paying. And we had to go to court, and we had to go all the way through trial, and the client really appreciated the effort, and we got an excellent result for the client. And that was very satisfying, and since then he's been talking me up all over town, so I can't thank him enough.
Yeah. What's the best part of practicing law for you?
I would say that it is taking people through difficult circumstances when they think they don't have any options and trying to find a good solution for them.
Great. What's the website address for the law firm?
www.offutkerman.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Doug Kay, who's the principal with Offutt Kerman. This is Peter Schwartz, and that was your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Colin Callahan, with my co-host, Dana Theus. And it's my pleasure now to introduce John Marion, president of Logos Technology. What is Logos Technology, John?
Logos is a small defense firm. We make persistent surveillance technologies for the military. Mm-hmm. And we've got several other things that we do, including biotechnology and lasers. Mm-hmm. And cyber.
Sounds like a lot of cool science stuff. How did you get a job with this company?
I got a job with Logos as I was leaving and getting fired from Lawrence Livermore National Lab. I was sideways with the management there. Mm-hmm. We developed this neat technology, persistent surveillance, and the Army was anxious to get it into a deployable situation and then deploy it. And I wanted to do that, and my management wanted to hold on to it for a while to mm-hmm. get the intellectual property protected. Mm-hmm.
So you moved on.
I moved on and
joined Logos.
I did. The key executives from Logos were also former Lawrence Livermore, and so I'd go to visit them before I'd go up to talk to DARPA, because they were CETAs at DARPA, so they'd help me get ready for that. Uh-huh. And they said, just why don't you come over whenever you get tired of that National Lab stuff.
And there you were.
There I was.
So you told us in the green room that you didn't start as president, but as you stepped into the president role, what was surprising, given that you had a background as a scientist?
It was surprising how much pleasure I got out of making the company run better. Uh-huh. Rather than solving, how to make this sensor work or mm-hmm. that kind of thing. So there is a lot of procedures and policies and planning, things that we hadn't done much of, mm-hmm. Or at least not at the level of organization. That sounds kind of like bureaucracy, but it's the company's working a lot better, right. And so it's a lot of fun.
So it's about maturing the business at that point.
Uh-huh. That's right.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Livermore, California.
Mm-hmm. And brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have two brothers, one a little older and one a little younger.
So middle child.
I'm a middle child, that's right.
I think you said the swing man, right?
Oh, yeah, that's what my mom calls me, the swing man.
And what was your mom doing growing up?
She taught elementary school, second and third grade, and then she was going back to school as I was in high school, and then she became a marriage and family counselor.
Counselor. Mm-hmm. And your dad?
He's an engineer at Sandia National Lab, and that was in the early part of his career was in really the heyday of the nuclear development. Mm-hmm. So he spent some time in the Pacific and had a astoundingly high level of responsibility given how old he was at the time.
Uh-huh. So did obviously it's hard to go to your dad's workplace when you're young and he works in that kind of an environment.
That's right.
But you were telling us about time you spent with your dad.
Yeah, he was very family oriented. He was an only child, so I think in some sense we were his brothers and sisters, so to speak. Uh-huh. But we spent a lot of time building things together, and we were always involved in quite an active role. It wasn't like we were watching him do it.
Yeah.
And he was very systematic and organized. You know, when we went backpacking, we had this list of stuff, you know, and we'd weigh everything and cut the handles off the toothbrushes and stuff like that.
Got to drop grams when you're going to go for a long
hike. That's right. And then when he'd come home, we'd just say, how were things at the bomb factory? You know, he couldn't talk much about it.
And what do you take, as you look back on it, what do you bring to your leadership style that you learned from your dad?
I think it's a level of organization and system thinking. I visualize things as systems, and I'm sure we've never talked about it, but I'm sure that's the way he sees them too. Uh-huh. Just because when we work together, we were thinking so similarly the whole time that it was pretty clear that our brains were kind of working the same way. Mm-hmm. And I think the idea that you if you visualize things as systems, then you can kind of see what goes first, what goes next, mm-hmm. what's more important, what's less important.
Yeah, great.
So I'm curious, you said that, you know, you see business as a system too. Is business like just sort of a system where all the widgets do what they're supposed to do and everything runs smoothly?
No, I think of it more as ways of figuring out what's most important, what things go in what order, what parts need to be brought together in what fashion.
Meaning like people, too.
People. It's mostly people. Yeah, that's right.
Do you think that you picked that up in the time you spent as a kid with your dad because that's kind of the way he approached things?
I guess that's probably right, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I hadn't really thought about that way, but I think you're right about that.
Yeah.
What's your favorite part about working with the people?
I guess I like that I treat people fairly and transparently, and that they view me as a genuine guy. I don't try and hide bad news or I think it's a transparency.
Mm-hmm. That you get to be real.
Yeah.
Yeah, and authentic.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You told us a story about the first time you made money, or maybe it wasn't the first time, but early on you had a job.
Oh, yeah. I was mowing lawns was a lot of work, so I started repairing antique furniture and just happened into needing to get some help from someone else. And uh-huh. So I hired someone who was very... much different age than me, quite a bit older than me, but we were quite complimentary, and uh-huh. and kind of it then occurred to me I could scale by hiring people.
Hiring more people. Yeah. Right. So you had your first employee then, you said, by 13
or so. Yeah.
And then how big did this little operation get?
It never got bigger than that.
But you just realized you could.
Yeah, that's right. Then I went to started teaching sailing for the rec department.
Uh-huh. How about mentors along the way that guided you to your leadership style today?
I think two of the big ones are my father-in-law, who encouraged me, well, more than encouraged me, to finish a PhD program and helped kind of think about how I should think about what careers I was considering. Mm-hmm. And then my wife actually was very influential as an example, she told me, I won't marry you if you don't go take EST. and just this philosophy that, you know, you yourself are personally responsible for uh-huh. the world that you have created for yourself.
Good for
you know,
her.
That was that helped a lot, actually. Uh-huh. And we don't necessarily use all of it still, but the vocabulary, you know, having a common vocabulary made it easier to talk to each other.
Right. Help build a certain predictable aspect to the family system.
That's
being
right.
Being able to communicate.
That's right.
Yeah.
Dana. I'm just curious, going back to those years you spent with your dad, you know, kind of hanging out, what were your brothers and sisters, or what were your other brothers doing? Were they hanging out with you? Was it a whole family affair?
Sometimes. A lot of it was just my dad and I. My big brother was a giant sports guy. He was really tall for his age, and so, you know, he lettered in three sports as a freshman in high school and things like that. He was really quite good. And my little brother was you know, so he took sports, I did music, and then my little brother did drama, and so we kind of divided up that way. But
there was a well-recognized, even when I was a very little boy, a very special connection between my dad and I in terms of, you know, enjoying being together, but also, like, we'd always want to do something. You know, it wasn't, we didn't sit around, you know, we were building something, or we, you know, that we always had projects planned, you know, even if it was just cutting wood or something
that,
like
that. That same inclination that made you want to actually make the technology practical that you were working on.
That's right. Yep.
Go do something useful with it.
Yep.
So was your dad, or is your dad aware of your success today?
He's been gone for a little over a decade. Uh-huh. But he was, I went back and worked at Lawrence Livermore across the street from him at Sandia. Uh-huh. And when I got a clearance, he brought me in and showed me the vault of all the cool secret stuff that he'd been working on. And
all those years.
And then actually when he died, his boss invited me over to clean out his desk with him.
Uh-huh. What was that like?
It was a little surreal, but because he had things in there from all the way back to when he was in charge of the Dominic series of tests, you know, when he was maybe 28 or something. You know?
So there's a lot of history there.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And, you know, just the things he had saved and why he saved this, you know, certificate or this,
If he were here with us today, what would you want to tell him?
Well, I miss him, but I appreciated him. It was interesting when he died. I was things were pretty cleaned up between the two of us, and I was
like
disappointed that he died. But and I it was also shocking to be, all right, let's see, how is this sewer line? Oh, I call my dad. Oh, I can't call my dad.
So you miss him. John, what's the website?
It's logos-technologies.com.
Great. Thank you so much. Danny, can you tell us about our guests today?
Yeah, I'd like to thank all our guests today. We had a great lineup, including Bill Knight, President and CEO of the Fairfax 2015 World Police and Fire Games, Karen Schwartz, owner, Springboard LLC, Linda Mathis, CEO, American Red Cross, National Capital Region, and finally, John Marion, President of Logos Technologies.
Well, I'd like to thank you, Dana, my co-host, for helping develop our storyline and hopefully to delivering to our listening audience an entertaining and educational show. I'd also like to thank you, our audience, for listening. For without you, we would not have a show, and we wouldn't want that. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. And you can hear this show again on businesstalkradio.net. Have a great day. Tune in next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
Welcome back to The Dog Show. Up next, we have Satchmo. Satchmo is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right, a group known especially for their couch-snuggling, ball-chasing, face-licking, tail-wagging, backyard-hanging, and, of course, companionship.
And what breed would you say Satchmo is?
I'd have to go with maybe a lavish terrier-hound-chihuahua-looking kind of mix.
Tremendous dog.
I'd also like to point out Satchmo's coloring, a white, gray, brown, black brindle. Simply marvelous.
You know, it's such a treat to watch a dog like this.
Now, let's see him in action.
Look how he makes eye contact with his person.
That's actually known as the treat stare.
How intuitive. And now he appears to be excitedly turning in circles.
Ah, the happy dance, so common with this group.
And finally, the loving face lick.
It's great how he just gets in there and, well, licks.
Fantastic. But really, the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Satchmo is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and Federal News Radio.